what you look like. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits. I could have my-
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Mario Ritter Jr. reports on a Chinese company's plan for a major investment in Vietnam. Later, Brian Lin presents this week's Technology Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first,
a Chinese supplier of electronic equipment to both Apple and Samsung plans a big investment in two factories in Vietnam. Reuters News Service spoke to two people who know about the deal. The reports say BOE Technology Group plans to invest up to $400 million. The plan suggests that U.S. company Apple and Taiwan's Foxconn are trying to make changes to how their parts are supplied. The changes could mean that some electronic parts production would be moved out of China to Vietnam as U.S. and other companies try to reduce their dependence on Chinese manufacturers. Political tensions between China and the United States may have influenced the changes. Production delays from China's severe COVID-19 measures also may have played a part. BOE, which is in Beijing, is in talks to pay for the use of land in northern Vietnam. It also aims to expand its small factories in the south. Those factories currently supply television screens to South Korea's Samsung and LG Electronics. That information comes from people who did not want to be identified because the negotiations are secret. BOE chose not to comment on the issue. Northern Vietnam has gained notable investments in recent years from electronics companies. It has become a center for manufacturing smartphones, computers, and cameras. That includes products for Apple and Samsung. Honhai Precision Industry, the trading name for Taiwan's Foxconn, and China's Luxshare Precision Industry also make or plan to make laptop and tablet computers there. One person told Reuters that BOE plans to rent 100 hectares and use 20% of it to build a factory for making remote control systems. The cost would be $150 million. The rest would be for displays. The goal is to have the developments in place by 2025. One person involved said BOE plans to make higher-level technology, such as organic light-emitting diode, or OLED, screens at the factory. Apple included BOE on its list of 2021 manufacturing partners. It uses OLED screens for its latest iPhone smartphones. Kuo Ming-che, is an expert at TF International Securities, a financial services company in Hong Kong. He said BOE is China's biggest display maker and aims to become Apple's largest supplier of displays for new iPhones by 2024. However, Bloomberg News reported recently that Apple plans to start making its own screens by next year. Apple chose not to provide a comment to Reuters reporters, but a person involved in the deal said BOE's Vietnam plan is not completely aimed at supplying Apple. BOE is also a supplier to Samsung, the world's largest smartphone maker. Samsung currently produces half its smartphones in Vietnam. LG also has operations in the country and plans new investments. I'm Mario Ritter Jr.
Messaging service WhatsApp has added support for a tool to help users stay online when governments block the internet. The company, owned by Facebook's parent Meta, recently announced it would let users connect to WhatsApp through proxy servers. A proxy acts as a bridge to connect users to the internet through servers in other places. Proxy servers can be set up by individuals or organizations around the world. The proxy system can permit people to be online even when governments have restricted or cut off internet services in their area. In its announcement, WhatsApp said the proxy tool represents an effort to put the power into people's hands to connect to its service if the internet is blocked or restricted. The company said proxy support was launched for WhatsApp users all over the world. In its statement, however, WhatsApp identified Iran as a nation where the government has been blocking the internet for months. Such actions deny people's human rights and cut people off from receiving urgent help, WhatsApp said. Iran's government has a history of cutting internet and messaging services. In 2018, Iranian officials ordered internet service providers to block messaging service Telegram. At the time, Iran had an estimated 40 million Telegram users, nearly half the country's population. The banning of Telegram came as widespread demonstrations took place in many Iranian cities to protest government economic policies. In recent months, Iran has seen widespread demonstrations in the country's Kurdistan province and in major cities. The protests began following the death of a 22-year-old woman who died while in police detention. The woman, Mahsa Amini, was arrested by officers of Iran's Morality Police. The Morality Police oversee the enforcement of Iran's restrictions on behavior and clothing in public. Amini was arrested for violating the country's Islamic dress rules. Iran blocked WhatsApp as well as Meta-owned service Instagram as unrest broke out over the protests related to Amini's death. The company said using a proxy server would not change the high level of privacy and security that WhatsApp provides. For example, it said all personal messages sent over the service will be protected by end-to-end encryption. Encryption is a process that turns information or data into a form of code in order to hide the information. WhatsApp provides step-by-step instructions for users wishing to use a proxy server. The company also created a guide for volunteers and organizations who want to set up proxy servers for users. Some users in countries facing government interference use virtual private networks, or VPNs, to connect to the Internet. A VPN uses software to link to private computer networks in other areas to make it appear that a device or computer is operating in another country. There are some similarities between VPNs and proxy servers. But one difference is that in addition to hiding where users are operating from, VPNs also encrypt a user's internet data. In September, WhatsApp competitor Signal announced it was offering proxy server support so users in Iran could use that service. In a report issued in June, the United Nations Human Rights Office said it had documented 931 internet shutdowns in 74 countries between 2016 and 2021. Shutdowns are powerful markers of sharply deteriorating human rights situations, the report said. The UN also noted that internet blockages carry major economic costs across many industries. Economic harms caused by shutdowns, the report said, are felt over long periods of time, greatly exacerbating pre-existing social and economic inequalities. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, Brian Lynn is here to talk more about this week's technology report. Hi, Brian. Thanks for joining me.
Sure, Ashley. Glad to be here.
This week's technology report describes a tool introduced by WhatsApp to permit users to stay connected to the messaging service when governments restrict or cut off internet service. We learned in the story that WhatsApp is offering proxy server support to keep users online. How does this work?
So the proxy servers are set up by people or organizations in other places. What WhatsApp is doing is permitting users to set up their devices to access those proxy servers to connect to the internet to use the WhatsApp service. The company has provided information to users about how to find and connect to the proxy servers.
Okay. Now, do we know why WhatsApp decided to offer this additional support at this time?
Well, in its announcement, the company said the proxy server system would be available to users all over the world. But it also specifically named Iran as one place where the government has ordered internet restrictions and shutdowns in recent months. So I would say the move was surely targeted at Iran, among others.
In your report, you point out how widespread these government internet shutdowns are. In what other countries do you think internet users might want to use WhatsApp proxy servers?
Yes, in the story, I talk about a United Nations report that suggests internet shutdowns in some form have been increasing since 2016. It is important to note that sometimes we're not talking about a complete shutdown of the internet. Sometimes governments will only restrict certain websites or social media services. In recent years, the report describes major internet restrictions in Iran, Syria, and Myanmar. But, of course, some countries, such as China, regularly restrict some material and news content as well without cutting off the internet completely.
Thanks again, Brian, for joining me and for expanding on your report today.
Sure. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On March 4, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was sworn in as president after winning a second term. The election had taken place in the Union of Northern States. The Union still followed the United States Constitution. The Confederacy of Southern States had left the Union. The South had its own Constitution. On the evening of Inauguration Day, the White House was open to the public. The party ended near midnight. Thousands of people went to see President Lincoln. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of President Lincoln and the American Civil War.
Lincoln was glad the celebrations were over. Now he could get back to the urgent problems that faced him. He hoped that during his second four-year term, he could end the Civil War. He hoped he could ease the bitterness and hatred the war had brought. Lincoln hoped for an easy peace. He wanted no hangings or other brutal acts against the losers. He wanted to see Confederate soldiers go back to their homes to become peaceful citizens of a united country. Lincoln wanted the nation to grow together again.
The war could not last much longer. The South already was defeated, but Confederate leaders refused to accept defeat. General Robert E. Lee's army still held the area around Richmond, Virginia. Richmond was the Confederate capital. Lee did not believe, however, that he could hold the city much longer. His once mighty army now had less than 50,000 men. These men were tired and hungry, and they had to defend a line almost 60 kilometers long from Richmond to the city of Petersburg. There just were not enough Confederate soldiers left to fight.
Lee decided that his only hope was to give up the two cities. He would march south and join General Joe Johnston's army in North Carolina. Perhaps the two armies could defeat Union forces moving up through the state. Then they could turn to meet the army of General Ulysses Grant. This plan had little chance of success, but it would keep the Confederate armies active for a few more weeks or months. Lee soon discovered that it would not be easy to break out of the trap that Richmond and Petersburg had become. Grant's army seemed to be everywhere. Lee put 11,000 of his men into position near Grant's line. They waited for the enemy to attack. At first, the Confederates received some help from the weather. Heavy rains fell for more than a day. Many roads and fields were flooded. The Union Army could not move forward. When it did, the Confederates were ready. They pushed back the attackers.
The victory did not last long. There were five times more Union soldiers than Confederate soldiers. The Confederates fought hard, but could not stop them. They were forced to withdraw. The Confederates moved slowly, then more quickly, as Union troops chased them. They began to flee wildly. About half of them were captured. Grant ordered an immediate attack all along Lee's line. He was sure the line was weak. He was sure he could break it. A Union Army doctor watched the battle from a distance. He said he could see the flash of light from Confederate guns along a line a kilometer long. After a while, part of the line went dark. Then another part, and another. Flashes of gunfire became fewer. Finally, all of the line was dark. The doctor said he knew then that the Confederate line had fallen.
General Grant had been trying to break General Lee's line for almost a year. Now he had done it. His troops raced forward to seize the railroad. Lee no longer had a way to supply his troops in Petersburg. He no longer had a quick way to move his army south. He would have to move west first, then turn south. This meant he would have to give up Richmond. The government of the Confederacy would have to go with him or be captured. Confederate President Jefferson Davis gave the order to go.
Southern soldiers began to burn military supplies they could not take from Richmond. Huge amounts of shells and gunpowder were exploded. The fires got out of control. Many buildings burned to the ground. The streets were filled with refugees trying to escape the burning city. Mobs broke into stores looking for food. Union troops quickly moved into Richmond. Then they raised the United States flag over the once proud capital of the Confederacy.
President Lincoln visited Richmond on April 4th. He visited the Confederate State House, where the rebel Congress had met. He had lunch in the Confederate White House, where Confederate President Jefferson Davis had lived. Everywhere Lincoln went, hundreds of people crowded around him. Blacks, especially, wanted to get near him. They wanted to touch the man who had made them free. At no time was any kind of hostile act made against the president.
In the next few days, Lincoln followed carefully Grant's campaign against Lee's withdrawing army. By telegraph and messenger, he was informed of every move. Lee's men marched without food. They did not have time to search for it. They could not stop. The Union Army was only a day behind them. On and on they marched, many of them, weak from hunger and tired beyond belief, could go no farther. They left the road to sleep. Most never got back. Others continued to march. But many threw down their guns and equipment. Union forces attacked the moving line when they could. There were battles at such places as Amelia Courthouse, Sailor's Creek, High Bridge, and Farmville. Lee's army fought off each attack, but it was slowly bleeding and starving to death.
Lee asked one of his officers to report on the situation. "There is no situation," the officer said. "Nothing remains, General Lee, but to put your poor soldiers on their poor horses and send them home in time to plant the spring crops." Lee answered, "What would the country think of me if I did that?" "Country?" the officer cried. "There is no country. You are the country to these men. They have fought for you, without pay or food. There are still thousands of us who will die for you."
On April 7th, General Grant sent a message to General Lee. He said it was hopeless to continue the struggle. He asked for the surrender of Lee's army. Lee did not agree that the situation was hopeless. He believed there was still one small chance to escape. He wanted to reach a place called Appomattox Station. There, his men could get food. Then they could march to Lynchburg, where a railroad would carry them south to safety. But the Union Army reached Appomattox Station first. Lee and his officers decided to make a final effort to break out of the circle of Union forces. If their plan failed, Lee would have no other choice. He would have to surrender.
Lee rose early on the appointed day. He put on a new gray coat and a bright red sash. He looked as if he were going to a parade. His officers wondered. Then Lee explained, "I probably will be General Grant's prisoner. I thought I should look my best." At sunrise, Lee arrived on a hill outside the town of Appomattox Courthouse. He looked down on what was to be his final battlefield. His men fought hard and well, but they could not break through the Union line. Finally, Lee said, "There is nothing left me but to go see General Grant, and I would rather die 1,000 deaths." Lee was sure Grant would not demand unconditional surrender. He said, "Grant will give us good terms, as good as we have the right to demand. I can surrender this army on the condition that its members will never fight again." Lee turned his horse toward the enemy lines behind his army. He sent a message to General Grant. It said, "I now request to meet with you at such time and place as you may name, to discuss the terms of the surrender of this army."
The place would be a home in a town called Appomattox Courthouse.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.